On our area, it's as you mentioned, mobile homes are really, really old. They are not safe places to be. Something that I have seen, is through the agreements that we have established with the Fair Food Program. There has been changes on the housing for workers inside Fair Food Program farms, but sadly, the conditions of vulnerability, living conditions especially, are horrible in most agricultural communities. So what we are seeing, it's all the dangers of climate change. Communities like Immokalee across the entire state are suffering more than other communities. So we're still trying to assess the impact of Hurricane Milton across the central part of Florida. And we are going to be trying to support those communities like we have done in the past. This time we were lucky that it didn't hit us directly. But we know that other communities are suffering and are going to be needing support that are in a desperate situation right now. So we will be taking steps to try to support them as much as we can.
And as we wrap up, we have 5 seconds, but the countries where so many of the farm workers come from, Haiti in your area in Immokalee, Haiti, Mexico.
And Guatemala, yeah.
And Guatemala, Gerardo Reyes Chavez, a farm worker, senior staff member, organizer at the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Southwest Florida, which also runs a radio station called Radio Conciencia, which helps immigrant workers prepare for hurricanes. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
I'm Grace Gerling Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting Negotiating Dramatic Events, a new show on KBOO, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. I am a social justice activist since the 1960s. The purpose of the show is to make life more wonderful for me and the people around me. And I'm 80, and I'm going to take my elderliness and share what I have found so that everybody can be seen, heard, and understood. Negotiating Dramatic Events, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate KBOO.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from local businesses. Do you have a local business or an upcoming event you would like KBOO's listeners to know about? Consider purchasing an underwriting spot before your favorite KBOO show. Take advantage of the best rate and audience in Portland by going online to kboo.fm/underwriting. That's kboo.fm/underwriting.
KBOO. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa Loving, and this is Keeping It Real. That's what we're going to do today. Can you sense the solar flares? The solar flares, that there's been stories about them. There's actually the U.S. Federal Scientific Agency made a warning about it. It's messing with our Wi-Fi, right? It's super interesting. That's my excuse for, you know, kind of being breathless right now. But we are joined by one of my favorite community projects of all time. Casey and Lisa are volunteer self-defense instructors, and the program director of Rose City Self-Defense, Sarah Johnson, are here. We're going to talk about volunteers, your opportunity to volunteer as a self-defense instructor. So hold on to your solar flares. Don't look for the aurora yet. The solar flares bring the aurora. They're saying tonight could be a big aurora, but I mean, I live by the airport. There's no auroras there. Anyway, we'll be right back. We are here. I want to say good morning, Sarah, Lisa, and Casey. Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys could be a music group. You just sang. Rose City Self-Defense has been on this show a few times, and in part it's because the work that you do is so, it's unique. I feel as if it's unique, and where you came from also is unique. So Sarah, I just want to start with you. What do you do?
So Rose City Self-Defense is an empowerment-based self-defense program. So what that means is we do teach physical self-defense skills, which is really important, but we teach so much more than that. In our almost 10-hour community-based class, we talk about using assertiveness and boundary setting. We talk about negotiating consent. We talk about healthy and unhealthy relationships, de-escalation strategies, and trusting your intuition. So it's this holistic approach to self-defense. And the way the program is run is the city actually funds two employees, myself and our youth coordinator, Tony.
Tony Fujiwara,
yes. Amazing, doing programs and after-school programming at Sun Schools. Those are 9-week programs, which is we add in more content and less physical skills to the middle school age, which is interesting. But the way we are able to reach community members in Portland is Tony and I have a staff of 30 volunteer self-defense instructors who teach these community-based classes and workshops. And it's just a gift to have these amazing volunteers. And I have to say, I started as a volunteer in 2001, and Casey and I were chatting before this, and when I did doing this interview, Lisa, it just reminds me of why I chose to volunteer.
Right. And so as you're just talking, that lets you know, listeners, that this is a program that is for people of many ages, and actually for everybody, honestly, when we dig right down into it. It was created to empower female people, women. It was originally Women's Strength, which was a program of the Portland Police Bureau years ago, and 4 years it was like that. And I'm just going to come out and say that Sarah Johnson has been driving this vehicle, and she drove it to a different destination, and I think that's fascinating. But now let's shift gears a little bit and go talk with Casey and Lisa. Casey, you first. Why did you get involved, and what do you do?
Good morning. So I have been wanting to do a volunteer experience for a while, but me, like many other people, I work a full-time job, and it's the typical like 8 to 5, and you know, I would go look for different things that would interest me, and they were during the day, and I couldn't do them. So I kind of became defeated and took a break from looking, and I got an email come through from my work that was Rose City Self-Defense, and my heart jumped. I got so excited, and then I looked and saw that it was flexible. You could do it at night, you could do it on the weekends. And so I went on the website, I started digging deeper and thinking more about it, and it is something I'm passionate about. Just as a person that's assigned female at birth, I feel this vigilance, like any time at night I'm walking to my car or I wonder about my friends, like I'm always wanting to be the wingman. And so I just feel like I wanted to learn more about it and find more tools and teach those to others. And it's just been so great to see to be able to teach and see how people come in at the beginning and how they leave. And it's really, it's so different. They're so much more ready to use their voice. They're stronger and they become a team. They come in strangers and they really support each other through it. So yeah, it's been great.
Just to leap in here, that is also a clue if you're listening right now that this isn't, you know, when I was in high school, middle school, we learned all these different things about self-defense. The female students had to learn quote unquote self-defense. I don't have any idea what the male students had to do. And now we know that men are assaulted too. This breaks my heart forever. But I wanted, one of the things that fascinates me about what you do, and then I'm going to go and talk with Sarah over here, is that you're shaping how people think about their personal space before they even get to a place where they're, I don't know, aggressed, attacked, freaked. I don't know. And that fascinates me. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. But now I want to go to Sarah. Sarah, how did you get involved and what do you do?
I'm Lisa. Sorry. We have Lisa. A Sarah here. I'm honored to be confused.
I'm also Lisa.
Sarah.
I'm also Lisa, and it just could be one of those
two
days.
Lisas,
it's
two
the
Sarahs.
It's the solar flares.
I mean, I could be Sarah today. That's fine. Yeah, so before I moved to Portland, I worked overseas for about a decade, and I worked for the U.S. government, and so I had a lot of security and safety trainings that I had to go through to go to different places, and we had offensive driving and emergency medical care, and we every once in a while, they'd pop in like an hour of self-defense, and I would always think, this would be really helpful to actually learn how to do like real self-defense. And so when I moved to Portland, I was living by myself, and I was looking for a self-defense course that I could take. And this was in 2017, and so it was still Women's Strength in the Police Bureau, but I found it through a Google search. And I was like, this is free? I get to do this for free? And I took the class, and it was incredible. All the things that Sarah talked about in terms of the physical skills, but also the verbal and nonverbal skills was amazing. And then a few years later, I found myself working at the city in public safety and getting to work with Sarah and getting to work more closely with the Rose City Self-Defense Program. And so when the opportunity came to volunteer, I just loved working with Sarah and Tony so much. I love this program. And I was like, yeah, this is how I want to spend my time. And I have a 6-year-old niece, 12-year-old stepson, and an 8-year-old stepdaughter. And especially for my niece and my stepdaughter, I just want them to be able to carry themselves assertively. And I know we're technically not supposed to, but I do some of the fun skills with Eleanor at home. The Wonder Woman, that's our favorite one to practice. So that's the reason that I decided to volunteer. And I also just really love it.
If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving. This is Keeping It Real, and our guests today are Casey and Lisa. They're volunteers, self-defense instructors, and the program director of Rose City Self-Defense, Sarah Johnson. Here's a day when I don't have every single thing scripted out. If you're listening, yes, I even write my name down because I get it wrong. You heard me just get my name wrong, right, with one of my guests. But this one, it's just... There's something about the sense of a lack of personal safety in our society today. And it's certainly always existed since 1619. It has always existed for a lot of people, right? But today, I mean, it's like we're sort of told in a way. We're told that we're in danger. Even the former president, Donald J. Trump, is saying things to women, you know, I'm going to be your protector. In a way, it's terrifying to be told that. Sometimes to be told that, especially male-centered institutions or individuals are protecting you, is scary. And I want to say this, I mean, I'm moving towards a point. I already mentioned, when I was in high school, in middle school, we did self-defense. But I have to say, at the end of the day, I think it made me more afraid. Because it made me think, you know, the situations I deal with are not like this, right? The situations I deal with are that guy that I'm dating, and he's saying things to me, and I sort of feel unsafe around him, but I think I must be imagining it. That's more common in my life. So, Ken, I'm not sure who's the best person to answer this, but can you talk a little bit about that and about why what you're teaching is so substantially different? They're gesturing at each other. Everybody
I
wants
know. We're all going to respond. It makes me think of, this is kind of adjacent to what you're talking about, but it makes me think of, we teach this three-step model of assertiveness. And we have community-based classes.
What is it? What is the three-step
model? I am going to tell you. I wanted to say that real quickly before I get into the three-step, we do these community-based classes for women-centered and girl-centered folks and non-binary folks comfortable in a women-centered space. But our workshops that we teach can be for any affinity group. They can be for any group of all genders.
A company, an institution, an organization, the library.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have that. But the three-step model, it makes me think of, we talk about, like, if you're first dating someone, setting boundaries is so important, right? And so the three-step model is called name it, frame it, change it. So you name the behavior, you kind of set the boundary using an I statement, and then you enforce the boundary. So I'm going to give you a couple examples of using this. So Lisa, I'm going to use you right now, Lisa Loving. We are just on a first date and you grab my hand across the dinner table and I immediately pull away because I'm not into PDA, but I don't say anything because I'm embarrassed.
Public displays of affection.
Right. Instead, I could say, wow, Lisa, this is a super fun date, but I'm not comfortable with PDA in public. So can we just step back a little bit and just enjoy this date? Right. And then what Tony has taught in the youth program, and I just love this. So I have two teenagers as well. And if you ask someone at the end of their day, how's your day doing? They're exhausted. They don't want to tell you. Right. So instead of being snarky, we teach them to use a three-step model and say, hey, mom, you're asking me so many questions right now. I'm super tired and had a super long day. Give me an hour in my bedroom and then I'd be happy to tell you how my day was. So like, owning, having youth set boundaries to adults is a super powerful tool, right? And then even setting boundaries with friends before we end up dating when we're talking about middle school and high school.
So in other words, you're stepping beyond just the, bring your arms up like this and do this with your foot, and you're actually talking about emotional safety in areas that don't have anything to do with street violence or per se even domestic violence. This blows my mind. How did you get here, Sarah?
How did I get here?
How is the organization here now? Because 20 years ago, I do not think that this is where the organization was. Not that anybody meant to do anything wrong or bad or negative.
No, I think
the
move out of the police bureau into the community safety division and now the public safety service area, was a huge move that garnered support in a different way that I had experienced with the police bureau. And then we also had this amazing thing happen. We had an intermediate class, which is now undergoing a curriculum shift, but I had six instructors who had been teaching, I think together they'd been teaching for like 40 years total, right? Again, volunteer instructors, and they came to me during the pandemic when we had to shut down classes. I was doing virtual classes once a month, but it's just different. Mm-hmm. It's really, really different, and it's a little harder, right? Yes. So they came to me and said, can we take this opportunity to update our curriculum? And so they literally spent 2 years every Wednesday night on Zoom updating curriculum. And in the beginning, they asked me, do you want to be involved? And I actually stepped back because I felt like I've been teaching this since 2001. I need an outside viewpoint. And so they're the ones that introduced the concept of negotiating consent. We updated our discussion on abusive relationships, and we simplified some of the physical skills. So we really want to be an intro level self-defense class for people with all different abilities as well. And so this curriculum shift was just amazing. And we took the time to change our name to Rose City Self-Defense so we could be more inclusive. So that's a little history.
It is a little history. And so in other words, what I hear you saying is you didn't sit on it and try to control every aspect of it. You let the program evolve itself.
Yes.
That's rare.
And we really, the focus on equity is also really important for us as a city employee and just as a person, honestly. And so the really neat thing that we did is after I approved all the curriculum, made some adjustments and edits, we actually hired an equity contractor to look at our curriculum to make sure we weren't missing anybody. And that was a huge step. And the neat thing is the contractor came back to us and she had literally three suggestions. She had a couple minor ones, but the big suggestions were, you're asking people to come to this class right after worker school. You need to provide snacks. That seems like such a simple, low stakes thing, but we actually got the budget to provide snacks and a free class. So now you can come to this class, and in the middle of it, we're not going to end up with you hangry in the middle of class. Right? Yeah.
That's right.
And the other little simple thing that she added that we, Rose City Self-Defense, we talk about community and empowerment, right? And so your first class, Lisa, you join this class, you get a name tag with your name, your pronouns, which we didn't say our pronouns in the beginning of the segment.
Would you like to take a moment and do that?
I would love to. I'm Sarah and I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Lisa, and I use she, her pronouns.
And I'm Casey, I use she, they pronouns. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Now I lost my train of thought.
Name tags.
So you get this number, and you're in a group for the evening. The classes, yeah. The community-based classes for Rose City Self-Defense are 3 weeks in a row. So like 3 Mondays in a row, 3 Wednesdays, or 3 Saturdays. And so that first day, you get to meet with your group and kind of get to know your group and build this sense of community. And then you work with this group the entire 3 hours of that class. And it just builds this... What else am I missing? It just builds community.
Mm-hmm. Which in our society today, probably in our world today, when something really, really goes wrong in your life, community is the only thing that really brings you back from there.
The one contractor idea that we are still working on is childcare. So that's my future dreaming, that we would be able to offer childcare in these classes.
I'm writing all this down. I know you're probably wondering, what is she doing and what's all that squeaking? If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving. This is Keeping It Real. Our guests today are Casey and Lisa with Rose City Self-Defense. They are volunteer self-defense instructors, and we're also joined by Program Director Sarah Johnson. Let's shift the format now and go to, you are here because you want more volunteers. What do they do? What do you want? Give us a scoop.
So Lisa and Casey just went through our new volunteer training in 2024. The training is January through March for 5 Saturdays from 9 to 5:30. And then we ask volunteers to commit to at least 1 year of teaching. But honestly, I have volunteers who have been teaching for more than 25 years. So people really end up, again, connecting to this program and wanting to stay. But I would love to bounce it to Lisa and Casey and say, what was your experience with new volunteer training?
Yeah. Well, it is, you know, you see the commitment. You're like, okay, this isn't like I'm going to stop in at the food bank once for an hour a month. You know, you're like, this is 40 hours over 3 months. This is a serious commitment. And you got to wake up on 5 Saturdays in those 3 months. But I would say Sarah and Tony especially are some of the most talented trainers that I have ever worked with. They are amazing. They make the training so energizing and useful and very practical. It's just one of the best trainings that I've ever received. And again, we go through the physical skills, but we're also talking about, you know, facilitating a group and how to handle it if someone walks out of a group, or sometimes they put little plants into your groups to do, you know, bad behaviors and how to...
What? Well, coming back to that. Go for it.
How you would manage that. But overall, I actually, you know, throughout the 5 weeks, just found myself even feeling more empowered, and just the delight of being able to be around all of these amazing people who were taking time from their weekends to show up to learn to train. That was really rewarding as well.
Yeah, and whenever you were, you know, taking me back there, I was reminded that Sarah and Tony had us kind of build a team within each other, which I thought was really neat. We spent time getting to know each other and hear each other's stories, like what brought us all here, why are we volunteering in this way, and that was really special to like connect with one another. So when we meet again and we all, you know, are teaching classes with each other, we know who we are. So that was a really special part of it, and just again watching the nerves on the first day, and then even by the end of the first day, we were just a completely different class thanks to the course giving us time to, you know, sit and learn and take things in, but also start learning those physical activities and getting us excited and feeling really empowered by the end of it.
This is remarkable too, because you're setting a table for trauma. I know that sounds like an extreme thing to say, but you're setting a table for trauma. You're inviting people over, and you're sort of building the inner self-respect and resilience that it's hard to learn from our family sometimes. So in other words, you're sort of, you're, in a way, I see you talking to my inner child, because it was my inner child that had to go to those darn self-defense classes that made me think, do I really have to fight people in the street that I don't know? Is that really what society is about? But
I have the urge to touch on that real quick.
Do it, do it.
So something I haven't shared a lot, but one of the drivers of me having the self-defense career is I took a fear-based self-defense class in college.
Is that what we call it, fear-based?
Fear-based or empowerment-based. And it's kind of an old-school way to do it, but it was like guarantees. You can never walk alone at night. You always carry your keys in your hand. At the end of the class, if you take down an attacker, you get an A. If you don't, you don't pass the class.
If you avoid an attack, you don't pass. Whatever.
And it was just, it was so intense that it scared me. And same experience that you had. And so this was back in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, back when I was growing up, or in college, I should say, out of growing up. And so once I moved to Portland from New York City and found the self-defense program, it's kind of like Casey. I actually saw an ad in the newspaper and was looking for community and just thought this would be an amazing experience. And I was so blown away by the empowerment-based versus the fear-based.
Because in other words, it gives you the power to see the people around you as other people.
Absolutely.
Right? There's a possibility that I could actually, I mean, I don't want to make generalizations, because sometimes, I see people in my social media that are talking about how they've been aggressed in the street in the past 4 or 5 years, and I have been a couple times too. And I don't want to minimize anybody's experience at all.
Absolutely.
I just want to say that there's different ways to approach our space in the world, and that's kind of what we're talking about. So I want to shift gears again and say, who should be a volunteer self-defense instructor? What kind of person would love this, or what kind of people are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I think someone who is comfortable, you know, being up in front of a room and training other people on a curriculum. I will say that the pressure to memorize the curriculum is really low. The curriculum is so good that you can take it with you and use it as your training. And so you don't have to, like, really know all the content memorize it by heart. So, because Sarah and the team have done such a good job with the curriculum. But yeah, someone who is, you know, open to being up in front of a room and teaching other people this content.
And one thing that I think is important, we have a no experience necessary. So we have people come in who are martial artists, what I think is amazing. But honestly, for those listening, those martial artists listening, it's almost more challenging to learn these intro physical skills if you've already been training in a black belt.
Intra-physical.
Intro.
Yeah. I love that, because that is that's what I'm keying in on. Like,
right.
I was privileged to attend an award ceremony that you threw earlier this year for people who had gone through the volunteer training, and I was just stunned by how positive people were, right? That, again, this is a table set for trauma on a certain level, right? And yet it's not. And I love that.
I was thinking of something that our data will show. We do pre and post course evaluations. And so some of the data that's really interesting is we'll ask people, do you identify as a survivor before a class? And that's about 20 to 30%. But post-class, people who identify as survivors, is about 60%. So people will take our class, and I've actually had an instructor realize she was in an abusive relationship in the middle of our training. like she hadn't identified it. And then we talk in deep details about what that looks like. And so people identify that they have been a survivor and start their healing process in our class.
And again, that might sound like a negative thing. You know, half those people realize that they've been victimized, and yet it's not like that. I'm just, I'm putting this out that it's not like that. You bring people to a place of talking. You bring people to a place of compassion. That's not what I know. I don't mean to chuck rocks at anybody, but when I go to a city of Portland training for anything, that's not what I expect. And I'm not saying you are the city of Portland, but I do also want to take an opportunity to say the Department of talk again about the bureau umbrella that you're under. I can't remember the exact.
So with the shift of our government structure, we're under the Public Safety Service Area, which houses police, fire, 911, emergency management, and who am I missing? I think I got
PBEM.
PBEM and
you said that already.
And the Office of Violence Prevention, and that's where we fall under.
Mm-hmm. And yet I know that there are people who people listening now have extreme views, and they may or may not like government institutions. So can you talk a little bit more about your personal inclusivity? Like you had said that one of your pronouns is they. Talk a little bit more about the communities you want to make sure are in the room when you're doing these trainings.
That's an amazing segue, actually. We actually just started this year a brand new class that is just for the LGBTQ plus population. And so we're launching that class tonight at the Q Center. Ah. Sorry, it's not public, it's closed. But look for that class. We'll have another one next year. But we're really excited to open up that class to all gender identities. And really, we've taken the curriculum and adjusted a little bit to meet the needs of that population. Talking a little bit more about street harassment, things like that, which is challenging and hard. But one thing I want to touch on that we talked about a little bit earlier with the fear-based empowerment bus, I meant to say this, is one thing that makes us that empowerment-based is we talk about not offering guarantees like that fear-based class did, but we offer options. So we give you all these different options that you choose what you would use for your personal safety and self-defense.
All right. And I wanted to walk back a little minute and say, why is it so crucial that this particular program has a really robust approach now to LGBTQI communities? Why is that important?
Honestly, in the LGBTQ population, I hope I have the statistic right, but there's literally a 7 to 8 time more possibility for assault than it is. And so people are being targeted, unfortunately, because of their identities. And so, like I said, we've adjusted curriculum a little bit to really shift and focus on the needs of that population. And like I said earlier, we offer these workshops to any affinity group. We're working within the city of Portland right now, actually. I have a call later today to talk about the affinity group of APANO, which is the Asian Association of Pacific Islanders. And what they want us to do is do a train the trainer for our safety workshop so they can train in all their different languages. And so we really, again, want to meet the needs of the community and where they're at.
It's an interesting evolution in a time of difficulty, and I'm just going to say in a time of sexism, racism, xenophobia, that makes this really stand out. And if you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests today are Casey and Lisa. They're volunteer self-defense instructors, and we also have program director Sarah Johnson. They're all from Rose City Self-Defense, and we're talking about their recruiting volunteers. They're messing with the equipment in the air room, and I'm just telling them, this is your first volunteer training. You are a KB volunteer now. You better be here now. I'm just saying that. I know that this is a complicated thing to say, and I know that people can be maybe, offended by it, but I am one of the biggest surprises in my whole entire life growing up is that is coming to terms with the risk that male human beings have of violence and sexual assault. Like, I mean, if you caught up with me when I was 20 years old, I would give you chapter and verse about how male human beings are the source of the root of all evil on earth, blah, 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 right? And then I gave birth to a man. I gave birth to a child who became a man. And it made me look differently at how we relate to each other. And I've been listening to, I've seen a couple interviews with the attorney for the accusers of P. Diddy, right? Who is a recording artist who's accused of multiple sex crimes and different aspects of that. And what this attorney's saying is, as they looked at the people who, something like 120 people now are filing lawsuits against P. Diddy, he's saying that after, you know, in the first 15 years or whatever, that these events, these, I'll say trigger warning events, I'll just call it like that. The first period of years, when you took a timeline of all the people that are suing, in the first years it was mostly female people who were assaulted, but at a certain point it became mostly male human beings who were being raped at these events, right? And it's complicated. So can you talk a little bit about why it's important that you're also creating this outlet for people who have institutions that want to bring in self-defense for male human beings? I mean, sometimes I just so question so many of the, so much of this. I think that I'm sort of sexist, and I think I kind of grew up sexist, and I've been dealing with that. Sexist mm-hmm. against male human beings. But can you talk a little bit about, like, how does that roll out for you when people are having their own, they're bringing you in to do self-defense for their own projects because they have so many people who maybe don't fit into the normal categories. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Do either of you?
Well, we'll see if this answers the question and then maybe come back to it. But I think it's a really interesting point. And one of the things that I've thought about, there's a lot of different things in our society that might tell a person or a group of people, you know, to minimize their voice, to not listen to their intuition, to feel like you can't be loud and strong and take up space. And I think that's a generally common experience for people born as females in our culture. But for example, like I grew up in a Christian conservative evangelical environment that also kind of sent that message across the board to everyone. Like your job is to, you know, not rock the boat, you know, be generous, be loving, be forgiving, you know, what you feel is probably bad. So don't listen to that. And I've had a lot of conversations, not just with people identifying as women, but other men who grew up in similar environments where it's light bulbs. Like I'm taking the step, like the three-step model, assertive communication, using your voice, taking up space, and light bulbs are going off for people of not just female gendered people. So I think it's really valuable skills for, you know, establishing boundaries and recognizing your own worth and being able to honor your intuition.
Right, because I think about thousands, untold thousands of male children who were, trigger warning, sexually abused at church, at the Boy Scouts, at the Mormon church. I think about that, and I think about, actually, Portland, Oregon was the center of the class action lawsuit against the Boy Scouts, right? So we know that there are people here, male human beings, adults, who went through some of the same stuff, and they are still stigmatized. There was never a rape crisis resource just for men. And yet, look at men in the prison system in this country. People who are coming back to their home communities who are traumatized by assault. It just gets me. It burns my toast. It burns my toast.
So I have to say that this last year, an unfortunate thing happened. We had a program under the Office of Violence Prevention called Youth Against Violence, which was a gender-neutral program focused on youth and anti-violence program, and it was cut from the city this last year. So in my dream right now, we would create that program again that would be a gender-neutral, anyone can participate youth program that's an education for anti-violence. So this is my putting that dream out there in the world that we would be able to start that back up again.
Right. I just had to take my hand and close my mouth because if I'm not mistaken, that whole bureau used to be the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. Maybe I'm wrong. I guess we don't need to do that anymore. That was very cynical, and I don't mean to be cynical. And sometimes, again, it's difficult when you're doing something within city government that some people are just going to judge it without knowing anything about it because of the reputation and the way city governments play out sometimes. So I want to shift gears a little bit and say, for people who are listening, How do people try to be, how do people be a volunteer for you? What's the process? What should they do?
That's a great question. So our application deadline is due on October 21st. So that's coming up in just over a week. And we take, as you hear, as you've been hearing on this show, we take our volunteer jobs very seriously.
Oh, you had like test hecklers or something? Whoa, I forgot to ask you about that. Whoa.
Well, we have an application you fill out. We do reference checks. We do an interview. And then we ask everyone to take our class so you know what the curriculum is. And then we start training in January. So that's our process. And we right now we're recruiting. We would love to have at least 6 to 7 volunteers for each program, our community based, our queer based, and our youth based. Okay. So we would love if you're interested. And I mean, it's when I became a volunteer, kind of like Casey said, I mean, it was just the best volunteer job you could have. It's just so, I want to say we're using the word empowerment so much, but it really is empowering. And then the other thing that, like Lisa was talking about, what we want for instructors or what we're looking for, it's like definitely someone who's a team player, because we do team teaching. So you're never alone in teaching. You're always with other instructors. And so we're looking for that as well. And I'm trying to think of other qualities we're looking for.
I mean, can you be transgendered? Is it okay to be a trans person?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes.
I just want to be crystal clear about it.
Absolutely.
So they fill out an application by October 21st. They go to the training, they go through a training. And then what happens? Like,
then you start teaching. So we ask you to teach, like I said, at least a year after your training. But this is kind of cool, and I don't want to get into minutiae, but we have levels of instructors, levels A, B, and C. Oh. So when you're a brand new volunteer, you teach A-level sections. So you don't have to learn negotiating consent, which is a heavy part of our curriculum, or our intuition and bias section, which is another very talky section. So brand new volunteers don't have to worry about that. They spend the first year teaching the, I don't want to say easier sections, but a lot of the physical skill sections.
More straightforward.
More of the straightforward and kind of the welcomes and intros and things like that. So you don't have that. And then we do a training after new volunteer training or during it that we level up the A levels to a B level. So then they learn. So there's layers of the training. And the other thing that Lisa and Casey, I'm telling you right now, is also so volunteers don't get bored. So there's always something else you can look forward to. You can level up to a B, level up to a C. And it's just an amazing training program. I think we've dialed it in.
Right. And it seems to me like it's the kind of training that you could use in your everyday life, in your family, with your friends. It's not like, you know, I spent a whole bunch of time the past couple weeks with Ida Galash. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ida Galash, trying to get her on the air. She's a Portland Monarch lady, right? She does everything about monarch butterflies. What Ida does with monarch butterflies might not be something that she can use in every relationship. You understand what I'm saying? It's really cool to get involved with Ida, by the way. We are going to bring her on this show. But the whole point of keeping it real is to bring people on the air who are doing concrete things to make our communities better, right? And ways that listeners can get involved. And that's why it fascinates me. What you do is so unique because it is a community of people. It's a strong community of people. And I also want to ask, like, what if you're a teenager? Can teenagers do this too?
Oh, that's such a great question. So our youth program is for 11 to 14, but our community-based program, we offer 13 and above. So young people, 13 to 16, we ask to be accompanied by a trusted adult to take the class with. But I just taught a class, Lisa and I taught a class Monday night and had two sisters who are 18 and 19 taking the class, and just powerhouses, very impressive young women. So I love that. Yeah.
Because what strikes me about getting kids involved and young adults, teenagers, is, again, I'm going to say this. I love innovation. Where does innovation come from? It comes from people who have a depth of experiential knowledge who are still sort of fresh to something. right? Not innovation doesn't necessarily happen in the ranks of PhDs. I love you PhDs, but I'm just saying, when you bring in kids and you bring in teenagers, you're bringing in the next generation, and you have no idea what they're going to be doing 10 years from now. We don't even know how people are going to be calling each other on the phone 10 years from now. Just going to assume that we're still going to be doing that. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests from Rose City Self-Defense today are Casey and Lisa. They're volunteer self-defense instructors, and we're also joined by Program Director Sarah Johnson. So in the last minutes that we have, right, I'm just curious about you both. One of the things that struck me about being at your award ceremony earlier this year is that there were so many different kinds of people there. And there were kids there, and there were teenagers, and with moms and kids, and it was just so vibrant. All kinds of different people. What are you hearing from people in your program? I mean, across the board. I'm not talking about this program specifically, but we're in a scary time, and you're literally creating a curriculum that helps people deal with fear and anxiety in a real direct way, right? What are you hearing from people? What's really, I hate to ask it like this, but what are people really worried about?
Well, I'm remembering, we were at the award ceremony too, and Sarah, you might remember their name, but there was a mother and a teenage daughter that went up to present. And that's something that I've seen a lot is, you know, a parent brings in their teenager that's about to go off to college. And I think that's a big fear for them is like, we're sending you off into the great big world and to college. So really wanting them to have these lessons that, you know, may have been taught throughout the course of their life, but have these lessons on consent and having a community and a network and resources and knowing their rights and feeling stronger in their self when they go off. So that was really moving to me and continually is whenever I see teens come in with their guardian.
Mm-hmm. When my daughter went to college, she went to Western Washington University, and what freaked me out and which I was not prepared for was she had an anxiety disorder. She needed to go to the health center to find a therapist, but they only dealt with people who had been sexually assaulted or people who had suicidal ideation. This blew my mind, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about like what are we afraid of? Like what are we really legitimately afraid of out there? I totally get it when someone says, I wouldn't want to send my male child or my transgender child, either my non-binary child, to college without them knowing that we are part of their team, right? And I don't want to badmouth every college out there, but there's something weird that happens when we segregate people together by age. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think though, Sarah? Like do people... Excuse me, Lisa. Hello. I'm still doing it. I'm gonna give you a name tag. No, I'm gonna take my name tag and put it on you. No, but when you talk to people, when they share their anxiety, like what do they say?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, it's really mixed. Like I was thinking about the class that Sarah that you were talking about, where we just taught on Monday and we had a couple 18-19 year olds, we had a 69 year old. I mean, just a mix of people in different experiences. So some people are in college and they want to learn how to take care of themselves on their own for the first time, and some people are a little bit older and they never learned self-defense, but they're feeling like maybe they need to start learning it now. I think it's varied. But one of the things that I really love about the course is, I mean, we talk about, and Sarah, you talk about options, but the toolkit approach and just giving people lots of tools, again, physical skills, but also verbal and nonverbal skills. And one of the things we talk about intuition and bias. We also talk about situational awareness. And I think it helps you identify what actually is unsafe as you're walking through the world and what is not. And just knowing that this is how I feel, just knowing that I have a lot of tools in my toolkit to deal with whatever might come up makes me less afraid to just be in the world. And that's what I think a lot of people take out of it is just like, oh, I mean, that's empowerment, right? It's like, oh, I have all of these options. And so I feel safer just walking through my life.
Okay. I have to stop. I have to rabbit hole. We do have a few minutes. What's in our toolkit? Can we just go over it? Can we open up our toolkit? I don't know if there's 100 things in it or 10 things. Can we? Because I know there's people listening right now that could absolutely use that.
Yeah, I think we start with what's the least amount you can do in a situation. So there's your...
In a situation where you feel uncomfortable or unsafe.
But you don't want to just jump in and go do like a move on someone. You kind of gauge the situation. And so like Lisa was talking about situational awareness, how to like stand, how to situate your body to say like... You're in a more assertive position. You're paying attention. You're aware of your surroundings and you're letting other people know that. And I think voice is a huge one. I mean, we are yelling in these classes. We are saying, no, leave them alone, back off. And I think that's the biggest, one of the biggest things I've noticed that students have learned is they're not used to yelling. They're not used to using their voice. And I think that's huge. A huge part of the toolkit is just knowing that sometimes that can stop it in an instant if you just make noise.
I have to say this, I only heard this discussed, right, at an award ceremony. And then earlier this summer, I was walking down the street and a man started shouting at me. And he wanted money, but he was shouting at me. He freaked me out. And I yelled at him like, I just said, no, bad, stop, go on. That's what you're supposed to do when you're training a dog. But it worked, and he literally did exactly what I said. And honestly, I don't want to have a conversation where we're saying rude things about other sectors of humanity. But again, I'm coming back to this place where you're literally giving people the tools that we should have had the whole time. You know, we don't have to just go straight for the pepper spray like my letter carrier did when my Chihuahua attacked him. He looked bad in front of the whole neighborhood, right? But to know that you have the right to walk down the street, you know, that's part of it.
I did a workshop recently for Tony. I did a workshop for, like Casey was saying, this group of college age young people going off to college and their parents, right? And at the end of this 2-hour workshop, the person who organized it, one of the parents came up to me and she was a psychologist and said to me, first of all, she thanked us for all of the content and it was beyond what she expected because I think people just expect that physical self-defense, right? Anyway, she said that 80% of my clients wouldn't come into my office should they have learned these skills in middle school.
Wow.
And so, I mean, that is a powerful, powerful thing to say, right?
Indeed. In the last few minutes we have, now I want to shift gears again and talk about how can our listeners support you?
I'd say take a class. Sign up. If you're interested in volunteering, fill out the application and sign up. You get to meet Sarah and Tony in the interviews and check out what it would be like to volunteer. One thing listeners can do who maybe aren't, you know, in a place to take a class or volunteer is just make sure that this stays in our city budget. You know, this last year we went through a scare that the program was going to be cut, and fortunately it was not. But this program is now 45
years old? Since 79. So, yeah.
And it's really amazing that we can offer this for free to anyone who wants it. And ultimately that benefits everyone, not just the people who take the class, because we're giving people skills to be safe and to move safely in
all kinds of people.
A little side note for folks who are interested in taking our class, we have a good problem that we have, which is we've got more demand than volunteers to teach. So our classes fill up usually within 2 hours of registration opening. So if you want to take a class, pay attention to that time and registration date. We've already filled up November class. So our next opportunity will be in December, and classes open the first Tuesday, I think that's Election Day, in November.
All right. And just we still have a few minutes left. This is kind of a hard question, but and I've asked you this before. For the people, if you were not here to do this, and even back in the day, women's strength was always on the chopping block, always. If you were not here doing this, What would the communities that you serve do?
Wow, that's a big question.
Because you're talking about hundreds of people. Each one of those people is a hub of community. I mean, I'm not seeing that wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So what would happen?
I mean, again, I go back to it's more than just we could probably look at, oh, well, a situation might happen where someone might not have the skills to defend themselves in that situation. But I think it's bigger than that. It's about, again, that empowerment aspect, that it changes the way you interact with your surroundings. So on one hand, it's the very specific situations that we're giving people tools to deal with if they need to defend themselves in that situation. So this could be, I mean, it's saving lives in that respect, but it's also impacting the whole community by making people feel safer in the community, and that benefits everyone.
Yeah, and just from taking it, I find myself looking out for community more because I feel like I do have my tool belt, and so I am observant. And it's even little things like I was out shopping and someone left their wallet at the counter and the cashier noticed and they kind of froze and I just screamed across the store, "You forgot your wallet!" And that's just like something I wouldn't normally do, but it's like totally opened me up to feel more comfortable looking out for others in a way that I was unsure about previously. So I hope it does that for everyone else that takes it too.
It helps you inhabit your space. What were you going to say?
I was going to say the other great thing about becoming a volunteer is when you teach, you get to practice all the skills. So you become better at learning them yourself. And I think the confidence increases, doesn't it? Just with the teaching the skills.
Right. And again, if you're listening now, it's I can't even say how different this approach is than what I went through when I was in school, which was like, this is the solar plexus. You know, make a fist and keep your thumb out, you know, and punch him. It's like if you couldn't relate to that. Because what strikes me, and this is nutty, I mean, maybe this is me always going off on the plank or something like that, but basic fear of the street, basic fear of walking down the street is a huge political issue. I'm not asking you to make any political statements here at all, by the way. Just to be able to have a resource that costs nothing, requires no batteries, right? Or equipment, I think, that can actually make people feel better about the space they inhabit, the right they have to walk down the street. It's not the same as, it's not necessarily the same as making people not feel afraid. It's making people feel like we can control our environment. We know what we know what to do, we know why we're here, and we know why that's important. And it just, you know, that's unique. Like I don't know of any other program that's funded by a city government anywhere that does that.
As far as I've researched, we're the only one in the country that has this model that offers it for free. There's many other amazing empowerment-based self-defense programs. Most are nonprofits. But yeah, we're the only one that I know of.
Okay. We're running out of show. Where do you want to be in 10 years with this, Sarah Johnson?
Oh my goodness, I want to have a volunteer staff of like 60 in classes all over the city. That youth program I was talking about will be flourishing. We will have, I don't know how many FTEs we'll have full-time staff, but yes, I want to grow this program should we have the opportunity.
How about you both? You're on the ground level, but you're doing the thing. What do you wish it would be 10 years from now?
Well, I'm thinking about what Sarah just said about how fast classes fill up, and that's only a function of having the volunteers to run the classes. So, I mean, I would love it if, you know, we could do 2 or 3 times as many classes a month, mm-hmm. because we have the volunteers to run those and offer them to anyone who wants them, and you don't have to wait, you know, 2 or 3 months to get into your class.
I don't know if we have time for this, but I also would love to. We've got other cities interested in our program. And so right now I'm actually working with Southwest Washington and talking about them bringing Rose City Self-Defense to their community. So that would be my other future goal, is sharing this with other communities around the country, honestly.
All right. I don't have any other questions except, Sarah Johnson, what's the most important thing that people who are listening right now need to know about Rose City Self-Defense?
Rose City Self-Defense, empowerment-based self-defense. Sign up for one of our classes. Become a volunteer. Volunteer deadline is October 21st. We look forward to having you. And thank you for having us on today, Lisa.
It's a joy. It really is a joy to have people doing intelligent things on the air. I love that. That's the whole purpose of this show, is to bring people doing amazing community work on the air so that you who are listening can participate in it. You, it's about you if you're participating.
And search up Rose City Self-Defense and you'll find our website real quick where we usually pop up.
Yep. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest Casey and Lisa, volunteer self-instructors, self-defense instructors, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Sarah Johnson, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Empowering girls, women, and the LGBTQ community with a focus on engaging communities of color, people with disabilities, folks with unstable housing, as well as safety for sex workers. All programming is free. Go to their website, portland.gov/community-safety/Rose City Self-Defense. Thanks for being tuned in. I'm Lisa Loving. This is Keeping It Real. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning